On 88.1 WYPR, I'm Tom Hall. This is Maryland Morning. We start today with a look at the continuing HIV/AIDS crisis in Baltimore. The total number of new cases in the city is declining, but transmission rates among young gay black men and transgender individuals are on the rise. Can the city bring those numbers down? I'll ask Dr. Patrick Chalk of the Baltimore Health Department for an update on the city's ongoing battle against HIV/AIDS. Then we'll meet the talented local string band Charm City Junction. They'll join us in studio to play some Irish and bluegrass tunes and talk about their eclectic musical palette. Plus, a conversation with Judy Collins. We'll talk about her long career and her new CD, Strangers Again, a collection of duets with some of the best male singers in the business. Tom Pelton puts the environment in focus. First, the news.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. You might have noticed a lot of red ribbons popping up the past few days on posters and in ads. The red ribbon is the international symbol for HIV/AIDS awareness. Next Tuesday is World AIDS Day, started back in 1988 at the depths of the epidemic. World AIDS Day is a chance for people to take stock of how we're doing in the 30-plus year battle against the human immunodeficiency virus and the syndrome of life-threatening illnesses its victims can fall prey to. Being diagnosed HIV positive is no longer the death sentence it once was, but getting treatment to everyone who's infected and curbing the spread of the disease are still major challenges in cities like Baltimore, where new HIV infections among certain groups are on the rise. Dr. Patrick Chalk is the Assistant Commissioner for HIV and STD, or Sexually Transmitted Diseases, in the Baltimore Health Department, and he joins me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to meet you, and happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
So the AIDS epidemic is sort of hardly really in the news today. I mean, there was a TV actor who announced last week that he was HIV positive, but there are highly effective pre- and post-exposure drugs now that didn't exist when the epidemic first started. It can make it, you know, a chronic as opposed to a fatal disease. But we should be clear, the virus that causes AIDS has not yet been vanquished, has it?
No, it hasn't. The numbers are going down in Baltimore. That's really the good news. Since about 2008, we've had fewer new infections each year up till our last complete database is 2013. And we don't think that's due to not testing enough people. We, in fact, test a lot in the city and have introduced a new campaign to increase testing from HIV in the private sector, in doctors' offices. It's called Protect Baltimore, and we use what are called public health detailers who go out and visit practices and bring a kit to provide information and testing information and billing information to help them put HIV testing as a routine practice in their care.
So you're comfortable that you're getting good data, that you're getting complete data and a real picture?
Yeah, I would give you a good example is maybe only 3 or 4 years ago, we did 25 tests to find a new infection, and last year it was 60 tests to find a new infection. So we're trying to reach in both the at-risk populations, but also, as I just mentioned, to make this more routine in the general population as well as part of primary medical care.
So generally speaking, rates of HIV are going down, but there are certain communities where that's not the case. Who are those communities?
There's two good examples. One is the injection drug using community, and that population has gone down dramatically because of our syringe exchange program in the city. So it's gone from what roughly used to be 60% of new infections down to 18% of new infections. On the other hand, the rise is largely among the men who have sex with men, gay men population, primarily young African-American men. And that last year or the year before, about 42% of the new infections were in that population. So that's become a new focus for all of us.
So how do you explain the rise in infection rates among those particular groups? I mean, information about HIV/AIDS, the importance of having protected sex as opposed to unprotected sex has been known for 30 years.
Yeah, I think there are lots of reasons. It's sort of complicated. Number one, young gay black men are least likely to know their HIV status, meaning they're least likely to get tested, so they don't know their infection, and they can spread it more easily to others. Number two, if they do know their status, they're least likely to be linked to care, and if they actually make it into care, they're least likely to stay in care. So if they don't stay in care, their viral load doesn't become suppressed, meaning that they would become almost uninfectious to not being suppressed, making them still infectious. So they run the risk of spreading this among their own community.
About 6 weeks ago, a couple months ago, you got a $20 million grant from the CDC. The city of Baltimore got this grant to develop a new AIDS strategy. As I understand, it's going to concentrate less on changing behavior and more on testing and treatment. Do I have that right?
Pretty much, yeah. We'll still look at behavior. That's always going to be a piece of the education program, but it's very clear that that strategy hasn't done very well in the past. So there's a new strategy called PrEP, which is pre-existing prophylaxis. It's a two-drug, one pill that someone can take if they're HIV negative and at risk to be exposed to HIV. So that can apply both to people at risk because of their sexual practices, but it also can be used for what are called discordant couples, where the wife may be negative and the husband may be positive. And by taking that, she can protect herself from taking on HIV. But it's more than a pill. It's really a strategy. It's a plan that's comprehensive, that's going to look actually at behavior issues. One of the two grants is focused around wraparound services for populations that we're going to focus on. In this city, social economic injustice has really been a big key factor in a lot of health outcomes, but particularly HIV. So we see this as much about social equity and justice as it is about HIV infection.
Is there a risk when it comes to incentivizing people to get on this program? I mean, this is for people who are not yet positive, right?
Right.
And they have to take the pill every day,
yep.
Right? So they have to remember to do that, et cetera. They have to get the pills, all that stuff. Is there a risk that that could encourage risky behavior because they say, oh, I'm taking this pill, I'm covered?
It could, but we don't think it's going to change it that much. We're probably going to see a rise in sexually transmitted diseases outside of HIV because of this, and that's been seen in other studies that have looked at this. But think again that this is not something that you have to do lifelong. This is really while you're at your most at-risk behavior. And what we want to try and get people to do is to become more monosexual with the same person over a longer period of time. And once you develop that sort of attitude towards your sexual lifestyle, that can happen. I think another part of this campaign is to really trying to normalize sexual conversation. We haven't really done that in this country very well. And I think that's an important part to this. And I think that we're also going to be hiring people from this grant, from the community that we're targeting, because we want them to be part of the message that's going to be carried into the community. So it's a very novel approach by a city health department in that we are not doing what some of the other grantees are doing. We're actually creating a citywide collaborative partners, which have the faith community involved in it, the LGBT community, clinics, research centers, and the health department. So it's going to be a citywide comprehensive approach to HIV beyond just the PrEP part.
You mentioned that there are some folks who simply don't know their status. They don't know whether or not they're infected. There's one report that calls it almost as many as 1 in 5 of the 13,000 people who are HIV positive here in the city don't know they're infected. So how do you reach them?
Well, part of this is the campaign to move this into the private sector, and part of it's the social marketing that we're going to be doing. We're not going to be using public health posters. We're engaging the target population to help us come up with the messages that we think that will reach them. So, for example, a couple years ago, we created a campaign called Status Update, and this was targeted basically to the House and Ball gay black men's community. And they created their own posters, their own campaign, and that, in fact, has proven to be extremely effective in reaching this group. And we actually had one of our mini balls just this last Saturday where we had over 600 people attend and about 100 people get tested for HIV.
Yeah, they call it the Status Ball,
yep,
right?
And, exactly.
The whole point of it is to know what your status is.
Right, and you covered this a couple of years ago, so we were happy with that.
Yeah, I remember we did that story. It was a lot of fun. With things like heroin addiction on the rise, and Dr. Nguyen has certainly been at the forefront of a national movement to address that very difficult problem. Governor Hogan has a very vested interest in this as well. Does HIV transmission increase? I mean, you mentioned the sterilization, the needle sharing programs, the anti-sharing programs.
Right.
But do you expect one is going to be tied to the other?
Well, not necessarily. Part of the epidemic around overdose is heroin, but a lot of it's prescription pain medicines. And for a lot of people, that's exactly where it starts. They get to being given large prescriptions of numerous pain medicines and get hooked on that, and then they go to heroin because it's cheaper. So there are all kinds of crazy things that are happening around prescription medications. I heard a assistant commissioner from Quincy, Massachusetts talk, and the new thing they're dealing with up there is open houses. So people who are hooked go to open houses that are where the house is being sold, but they go to the kitchen or the bathroom cabinet and look for prescription medicines that they can steal. So it's a complicated situation, and it's clearly not linked just to Baltimore. We're seeing this all over the country. So we're trying to do outreach to both emergency departments and private physicians to adjust prescribing practices. We have the Don't Die campaign that the mayor and the health commissioner have launched. And then we also have a overdose naloxone training, which is the medicine that's given to reverse an overdose. So that's a large citywide campaign that we have going on as well. So it's multifaceted, just like the problem is.
But do you think it will have much of an impact on the efforts to stem the spread of HIV/AIDS?
Well, again, our syringe exchange effort is the one that's really doing the most work on that. And as yet, we haven't seen a change. It's been a steady decline every year. Even when overdose deaths have gone up, we haven't seen any change in HIV due to injection drug use.
The TV actor Charlie Sheen announced last week that or admitted after keeping it quiet for a long time that he had been diagnosed as HIV positive. It brought to the fore the notion of the stigma that's attached with being HIV positive. Is there also a stigma attached to taking the PrEP drug, for example, for being involved in this new program? And if so, how does one, as a city health department, how do we overcome that stigma?
Well, I think our work with the community is going to help address that, because that is an important point. But I also would like to reinforce that when people think HIV is not stigmatizing, Charlie Sheen is the poster boy for that. He spent millions of dollars to try and conceal his HIV infection, and if it weren't stigmatized, he wouldn't be doing that. So if that can happen to an actor, one has to understand what it must look like in a poor black person who's unemployed and has a very unstable life. So we really have to take that into consideration when we're doing this.
You mentioned this is a new and novel approach. It's even an approach that a lot of other cities are not following. What exactly are you trying to fix about the approach from previous efforts?
Well, right now we have excellent treatment once you become infected. There's about six classes of antiviral drugs and about 30 drugs in that group of drugs. So once you've become infected, we actually have great work that can take care of that. What we haven't done is to do the taking care of the exposure and the risk before that. And that's largely what this is intended to do, is to complement those who are infected and those who are not infected. So we have sort of a continuum of activities that address all aspects of HIV.
I also want to talk about the transgender community. Mm-hmm. That's another special community that has had to grapple with this. In the past, the health department's had a tough time reaching.
Well, yeah, we actually have transgender members for our HIV planning group, which is a citywide planning group that works on HIV, and we've done lots of outreach to the transgender community throughout the city of Baltimore. There's a group that voluntarily comes together on Friday nights called TAG that reaches out into one of the areas of the city where lots of transgenders exist, and that's also a target population for our PrEP work as well. We actually have recruited some transgenders to work with the faith community to change the faith view of transgenders. They're clearly a more hidden portion of the sexual minority community, and we're doing a lot to reach out to them because that is a very important population. Studies show that anywhere from 30% to 60% of transgenders are HIV positive.
Dr. Patrick Chalk is the Baltimore Health Department's Assistant Commissioner for HIV and STD Services. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much
for coming in. Thanks for inviting us.
We've got more information about the Baltimore Health Department's HIV services on our website. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Ahead on this pre-Thanksgiving edition of Maryland Morning, some music by a brand new band and a musical legend. After a break for news, Charm City Junction will play us a few foot-stomping tunes. And a little bit later on, I'll talk to the one and only Judy Collins. Stay with us.
If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our audio archives there and learn more about what you just heard, or even make a pledge to support local programming. Again, that's at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, back to the show.
And up a little later, I'll have a conversation with the great Judy Collins about her first studio album in more than 4 years. She'll be performing at the Meyerhoff on Sunday night. But first, some homegrown music from Charm City Junction. They're a quartet that plays old-time bluegrass and Irish music. They've just released their first CD called simply Charm City Junction, and they will be doing a CD release concert Friday night at the Friends School in North Baltimore. They're with me in the studio today, and they have brought their instruments, and they're going to play us a few tunes. Gentlemen, it's nice to see you.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Let me just have you introduce yourselves. Brad, we'll start with you.
So I'm Brad Kolodner over here on the banjo, and I perform pretty regularly with my father, Ken, and it's fun to be back here at WIPR with the band.
Awesome. And I'm Patrick McAvenue. From Hereford, Maryland, originally, and I live in Baltimore now. I play the fiddle with a group called Audie Blaylock and Redline, along with Charm City Junction and the Hot Club of Baltimore.
Hi, I'm Alex Lacquemont, and I play the upright bass. I also play with the Bumper Jacksons, and I'm a new resident here in Baltimore.
And I'm Sean McComiskey. I play the Irish button accordion. I'm playing here with Charm City Junction. I've also played with a few other groups in the area, namely the old Big Kaylee Band is probably the one that the Irish people in the area would know the best.
Yeah, great. So, Brad, you guys all play with other people and, you know, do other things musically. Why get together and play as a band, you know, form a band, Charm City Junction?
Well, all of us came from different musical backgrounds. As you heard, I play mostly old-time music. Patrick plays bluegrass. Alex plays early jazz, country, you know, and Sean does Irish. And so we're all, though, within the same age bracket and just became friends at this Irish pub down on North Avenue called Liam Flynn's. We would jam there in the early days of the group a few years back. And we didn't really see those lines between the genres as a barrier. We thought this would be fun just to get together and jam and play music, regardless of whether it's Irish or whether it's bluegrass or whether it's old time. And we just became friends through a jamming together, and then kind of took a few more steps and said, hey, let's make an album, let's play some shows, and it snowballed from there.
Yeah, great. So, Pat, you guys are going to play a couple tunes for us. The first one is called Frog on a Lily Pad. I guess this is a tune that you brought to the group. Tell us a little bit about
it. Yes, so I first learned this tune from Caleb Clowder while I was in Germany touring with him, and I brought it to the group because it's a Bill Monroe instrumental that I don't believe he ever really recorded, but there is a video of him playing it on YouTube somewhere. But he plays it a lot faster. You would almost not recognize the tune. But Caleb is a killer musician, has a group called
Foghorn String Band,
and his country band, and he's an awesome mandolin player. And it's a really, really neat tune, and the way that these guys treated it is really interesting and a fresh way.
All right, Charm City Junction. They've got their instruments here in the studio. This is Frog on a Lily Pad on Maryland Morning.
One, two, three. Thank you.
Lily Pad, Charm City Junction, playing for us here in our studio. That was great, you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Alex, when you guys have tunes, I mean, this is how you get a repertoire, right? You just, like, introduce tunes to each other?
Yeah, we usually, it happens in someone's house, and we get together and work on the tunes and just kind of workshop them and keep an open mind about them, but also try to respect the tune itself and see which way that we can find a new way to play it.
And Sean, I mean, are you picking up these tunes from like some of the other groups you're playing with, or just do you have them? Do they come serendipitously, or where do you find the music that you want to play with this band as opposed to the music you might play with other folks?
The tunes that I brought, I learned from good friends of mine. We say in the Irish music scene, we learn through osmosis. So you learn it when you're playing in a session. You don't even remember learning it. You just kind of pick it up over time. So a lot of the tunes that I've brought to this group were learned that way. So I associate a lot of those tunes with fond memories playing music with people in other cities, either in Baltimore or anywhere around the country. Mm-hmm. And I thought they might fit well with this group.
Great. Tell us a little bit about the medley you're going to play for us now, Torn Jacket and Come West Along the Road. This is one of the ones that you brought to the group.
This is a blast of reels, as we like to say in Irish music. The first one, Torn Jacket, was a composition of a fiddle player from Ireland named Connie O'Connell. And I thought it went really well with this tune, Come West Along the Road, which is a really standard, classic Irish session tune that you'd hear anywhere at any Irish jam around the world.
Great. Charm City Junction playing once more for us here in studio on Maryland Morning. We'll be right back. Charm City Junction playing for us here in our studio. Once again, gentlemen, that was terrific. You guys cook. It was terrific. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
That's good. All right, so you guys are going to introduce this CD on Friday night. That's terrific. Have a great time. You're going to take us out with a tune called Train on the Island. So Charm City Junction, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming by and break a leg with the record.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Charm City Junction. Brad Kolodner is on banjo, Patrick McAvenue on fiddle, Sean McComiskey on accordion, and Alex Lacamont playing bass. They'll be introducing their new CD on Friday night, 7 o'clock at the Stony Run's Friend Meeting House on the campus of the Friend School in North Baltimore. Brad Kolodner's dad, Ken Kolodner, will also be on the bill that night, and Charm City Junction will join Ken and his popular band, Helicon, for their annual Solstice concert on December 19th. Helicon will be stopping by Maryland Morning for a little preview of that show next month. After a break, Judy Collins joins us. Stay with us.
15 Is there an issue that you'd like to see us cover? Let us know. You can email us at mdmorning@wypr.org, or you can leave us a voicemail. Just call 410-881-3162. Visit us on the web to leave comments or to hear previous episodes. That's all at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, on with the show.
Judy Collins holds a unique and cherished place in the top echelons of American music. In September, she released a new CD called Strangers Again, a collection of duets with Michael McDonald, Willie Nelson, Don McLean, and several others. Here she is with Jackson Browne in a tune called Feels Like Home.
If you knew how lonely my life
Collins will be giving a concert at the Joseph Meyerhoff Symphony Hall in Baltimore on Sunday afternoon, and this morning she joins me on the phone from her home in New York. Ms. Collins, welcome to the show. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much.
So it's kind of hard to believe, but Made of Constant Sorrow, an album that I have and everyone I know has, you released in 1961.
I know. It's incredible.
It is. And this record is 50 albums later. This is your first one in 4 years. What's the idea behind this album of duets?
Well, it's when we say that, it makes me feel lazy. It is duets, and my previous 2 and 4 years ago, I released PBS shows with DVDs and CDs. One is at the Metropolitan and one is an Irish show. So I've been working hard and thinking about this for 4 years, and I finally got it together and called up my friends. And it was because I found a song by Ari Hest called Strangers Again, which sounds like a strange title, but that's the name of the song. So I started calling my buddies, and they all said yes. So, you know, I gathered together some of my favorite voices in the years that I've been singing, plus some new artists, Ari Hest and B. Beeman and Thomas Dimsdahl, who's a Norwegian. And, of course, Glenn Hansard is rather newer. But Jackson Browne and Willie Nelson and Jeff Bridges and all the others said yes.
Well, I don't think anybody can accuse you of being lazy with, you know, 50 albums and books and movies and all the stuff you've done, you know, in and out of performing. Jeff Bridges is a very interesting and wonderful surprise. You and he sing the finale from Candide, the great show by Leonard Bernstein, called Make Our Garden Grow.
That dreamers dream, what worlds they please, these years can the sweetest flowers, the fairest trees, are grown in solid ground.
I wasn't even aware that Mr. Bridges did a whole lot of singing.
Well, I know Jeff for a long time, and I knew that he sang in Crazy Heart, the movie that he made, which I think garnered him an Academy Award a couple of years ago. So my idea was to have him sing Crazy Heart with me. And he said, no, I have this other idea. That happened a couple of times. And he said, no, I'd like to sing the song from Candide. And, you know, I didn't know the song, which is strange. It's strange that I wouldn't have. But it was a wonderful introduction to a great piece of music that I had not known before. Jeff has a group called The Abiders, and he makes records, and he travels with them, tours with them, and they're a wonderful band. So I did know, and I learned a lot of other things from him. I found out who his co-writer is, a guy named John Goodwin, and we went to see Jeff Bridges perform in Ridgefield, Connecticut. And when I went backstage, I was talking to him about various songs, and he said, well, that was written with John Goodwin, you should call him. So I called him up, and he sent me a whole bunch of songs. And unknown as to who the writers were, I chose one that is called Miracle River. And it turns out Michael McDonald and I were trying to figure out what to sing together, and I chose Miracle River from the songs that John Goodwin sent me. And then John said, well, you know who wrote that? Amy Holland wrote that. She's married to Michael McDonald.
When you find and reach your destination, fall down on your knees and thank your maker for all the crosses and the blessings on the journey to Miracle River.
It very much evolved organically, and I think that was part of the pleasure of it. I had an awfully good time doing this CD. Also, we had a wonderful band, and we had some people come in and do special things, like Yoed Mir played the cello on Send in the Clowns. That was Don McLean's idea to do that song. It wasn't mine.
Yeah, of course, you're revisiting a song. I mean, that's a very famous song from A Little Night Music by Stephen Sondheim, but you probably are the one that brought that to, you know, literally international attention when you recorded it many years ago.
Don't you love farce? My fault, I feel.
I thought that you want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns?
Quick, send in the clowns.
Don't bother, they're here.
I wanted to sing Starry, Starry Night, Vincent, with him, and he said, no, I don't want to do that. He said, I want to sing. He said, you'll laugh, but I want to sing Santa and the Clowns with you. And I said, well, I'm not laughing, actually.
Yeah, well, that
sounds like a great idea.
That's something he didn't want to do, one of his old tunes, but he was perfectly happy doing one of your tunes that you was, I see. And that was accommodating
yes, exactly.
of you to go ahead and agree
yes.
to it. That's great. You know, you strike me. This album is just beautiful. I mean, it's produced beautifully.
Thanks.
It's played beautifully. You sing it gorgeously. When I think about the arc of your career, I mean, you start as a classical pianist, and, you know, you've done folk music and films, and you're active as an advocate for so many causes. You strike me as the paradigmatic lifelong learner. You're doing so many different things. What do you think you're learning now? You're in your mid-70s. You're still playing. You're still performing. What do you think you're learning most now?
Buddha patience.
That comes in handy in your line of work, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have to be patient, and you have to know that, you know, when it's not your turn, it's not your turn. And when it is turn, you give it your turn. You give it all you got. That's probably the best thing I know.
That is a good thing to know, a very good thing to know. Tell me about your relationship with Ari Hest, who will be on the bill with you at the Meyerhoff Sunday afternoon. He's an extraordinary musician, isn't he?
He's so prolific. What a great writer. And I just think he's wonderful. He comes, he opens the shows for me, and we sing a couple of duets together. We'll sing Strangers Again together and a couple of more songs on my show at the Meyerhoff. And he's very special. I think you're going to really embrace him as we have and celebrate his talent as well.
Well, we're going to go out with a little from Strangers Again with you and Ari Hest. And Judy Collins, thank you so much for your time. Happy Thanksgiving, and best wishes to you and your family.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Judy Collins will be performing with Ari Hest at the Meyerhoff in Baltimore Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock. The new CD is called Strangers Again. We've got information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That'll do it for us this morning. On behalf of the Maryland Morning team, Nathan Sterner, Rob Sivak, Jonna McCone, Kathleen Cahill, and Scott Seiss, I'm Tom Hall, wishing you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back with you on Friday. Have a great holiday.
I want yesterday to come back again. Now